sleeping mangroves, a good 100 paces to the east. She glanced at the sky. Light was already beginning to fade, little shadows lengthening, making the place even more dark and gloomy. There was certainly no hope of returning with rescuers from the Ville before full dark, which meant the two options were really only one. She began to pick her way cautiously around the edge of the bayou, stopping suddenly and carefully reloading her gun, her fingers only trembling a little. The first two dives were fruitless. All Ryan found were hollows and pockets in the mud, none of which went more than a few feet in any direction before closing off in dead ends, which meant a difficult retreat, wriggling backward, fighting all the time to overcome the rising waves of terror at being helplessly trapped in the filthy hole.
Third time's the charm. The air quality's diminishing. Maybe it won't drown after all. Maybe I'll suffocate.
Soon Ryan was twisting and turning as he battled his way between the slick roots. He was already more than halfway out of breath, his lungs straining with the effort of swimming underwater. He knew he'd swum too far to make it back again, even if he was able to turn around in the cramped space. If he didn't manage to reach the outside within the next 15 or 20 seconds, then he would suffer a bleak and miserable ending. He could only go on. Christy knelt, trying to draw on all her special powers, the power to feel whether there was any life form within the immediate vicinity. There was something, but it was very faint and oddly muffled. It wasn't like anything Christy could remember ever having felt before.
Ryan?
The feeling seemed to be getting gradually closer, gaining in strength. Unless she was imagining it, willing it to happen, making it happen. The oxygen in Ryan's lungs was gone, and he was swimming through the slippery tunnel on automatic pilot. His survival reflexes carried him through the stinking mud, his legs kicking more and more slowly, his hands pulling desperately at the elusive roots of the trees that threatened to entrap him and hold him in the slime for all eternity. A part of Ryan's brain was actually aware that he had begun the inexorable process of dying, and it was beginning to close itself down. The urgency had faded, and he was barely moving at all in any direction. His body still held in the grip of the narrow tunnel entrance. It was nearly over. Then, from some deep, dark well of reserves, Ryan made a final despairing effort, giving a last kick with his legs and a last pull with both his hands before the endless night finally swallowed him. Christy stood, shading her eyes against the dying of the light that speared between the trees, turning the clumps of Spanish moss into frail balls of living fire. There was something across the lagoon to her left, only a scant 20 yards or so away. It could be a floating log, almost totally submerged in the brown water, or it might more likely be an alligator hunting silently and still, or it might be Ryan. She headed toward the object that hardly showed above the placid surface. Reaching it, she paused to shake her wet hair away from her eyes. It was Ryan, face down, inert, arms and legs spread like a huge starfish, his curly black hair floating motionless around his skull like a wraith. Christy didn't hesitate. Reaching her arms around him, she tipped him over, then clutched him to her and started to kick her way backward, dragging him after her, cupping her hand under Ryan's chin to keep his mouth and nose clear of the water. The few yards were endless. Something long and sinuous brushed against Christy's feet, but she pushed it away and carried on. Ryan was a dead weight, his arms and legs trailing, his right eye open and staring up at the darkening sky.
Hang on, lover. For Gaia's sake. For my sake, hang on!
She glanced over her shoulder, seeing that the bank of the swamp was now only a dozen feet behind her. She felt soft mud sliding under her feet and struggled clumsily to drag Ryan's body up out of the filthy water onto relatively dry land. She immediately rolled him onto his back, probing into his slack mouth to make sure he hadn't swallowed his tongue, along with the gobbets of mud and watery phlegm. When she was sure she had cleared the airway, she knelt by his side and took a deep breath. It seemed hopeless. He was dead. His skin was sallow and cold. There was no reflexive movement when she touched his staring blue eye. No respiration, no pulse, nothing. Alone in the dank wilderness, Christy worked on, breathing in, pressing down on Ryan's chest, repeating the process again and again. The light was almost gone, and she could barely see the white face below her. Uncle Tyus McCann, back in the Villa of Harmony, had once told her about a near drowning in a vill that he lived in as a teenager, up in the cold north of old New England. A child had slipped through the thick ice of a fishing hole, and had been thought lost despite all the efforts of the men of the settlement. They had smashed the ice for many yards around, eventually discovering the little body floating on the dark lake. He'd been there for at least 15 minutes, according to Uncle Tyus, frozen and still. But the lad's mother had been the daughter of one of the last of the surviving pre-dark doctors in Deathlands, and she had refused to give up all hope, working away until death had reluctantly loosened its hold on the small child, and he had begun to breathe again. If it could work for a little boy, it could work for Ryan. There was something, a tiny spark in the darkness, a stir in the night. She reached for the artery at the side of Ryan's throat, below his ear, and felt a tiny, hesitant tremor of life.
Yes. Oh, thank Gaia. Oh. Oh,
God. Johannes Ford grinned at the group of friends standing around his wag.
Thought you'd all like to have what they used to call a sneaky preview of the latest epic movie before we go and take up the family's offer of supper and accommodation for the night. What do you say? What do you say?
Ryan nodded. Once Christy had revived that frail glimmer of life, he had recovered amazingly fast, his strong constitution helping him to pull through. It had taken another hour, into full dark, before he'd come around enough to pick a cautious path back to Brampton, where the others had been waiting anxiously. JB had already organized the search party, enlisting John Winthrop and some of the men of the Ville. They disbanded with undisguised relief once they saw Ryan and Christy stumbling out of the darkness. Now, after a bowl of rich vegetable stew, Ryan was almost completely recovered from the near drowning, though he was still totally blind.
I've got it all processed and we can take a look. Not what you'd call a finished cut, as there's a few bits and bobs that need trimming.
Ford's neat white beard and mustache seemed to float in the gloom, with a life of their own. He was still wearing his fringed buckskins, and his ponytail was now tied back with a ribbon of brightest gold.
When will you show it to the town? That's when they'll settle up with some jack.
Indeed, yes. Straight and true as an ebony rule, that is. But friends first.
Jack turned to peer into the darkness beyond the Clanton Corral and the livery stable. His nocturnal vision was the best in the group.
Someone coming.
Cornelius? Come to see why we're late for the meal?
No, Demea.
It was John Winthrop, scurrying along, keeping close to the shadows of the buildings that lined the main street. He wore a long duster coat, dark brown, with its collar turned up high. When he arrived, he was visibly nervous, in case anyone saw him there.
I ain't got much time, Outlanders.
What is it?
You seem decent, honest folk.
Get on with it.
Right, Mr. Carter. Indeed. Straightest point between two places is the shortest line. No, wait.
We get the picture.
Yeah, we see.
Danger?
Deep and dark. The family has reigned here for longer than anyone can remember. Word is that they never change. No, that's wrong. Because they change. Yeah, surely they do that.
You aren't making any sense. They never change, but they always change?
The clouds had drifted away, and a bright moon hung over the bluffs to the east, toward the clifftop house of the family.
Old people here, like Zenobia Simpkins, swear that Elric and the others have hardly aged a day in the last 20 years or more.
Old wives' nonsense. Stuff and damned taradiddle.
You may think so, Doctor, and you can surely not look to me for comment on that.
Get on with it, man.
Just a word to the wise, Outlanders. Brampton has been owned by the family since just after Skydark. Some say for centuries before that.
You continue to spout the most arrant rubbish, Winthrop. Before Skydark, there was no question of barons and the owning of land and of people. It was not the American way. Do you have any cogent proof for us of your preposterous conceits? No, of course you do not.
Sir, there have been young men and young women missing. Only one body found, torn and raggled by the millstream. The others, never seen again.
Every frontier pestle is the same story, Winthrop. Young folks get tired and up their roots and move away.
Something passed its shadow between the moon and the watchers. A creature that seemed to have a huge wingspan, oddly shaped. It swooped once more, turning its speed so that none of them could see it properly. Then it vanished.